Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
He was what?
He was ecumenical.
He was very ecumenical. Absolutely. Absolutely. And his best friend in life as a child, for those people wanting to pick up clues to my family, was one George Gershwin.
They were
best friends. Yeah, they were best friends. They were best friends. And he also represented Irving Berlin in the music publishing business. Yeah, Uncle Benny. And it was a tight wad. And he cut me out of the will, so I got the table. So I've got the last laugh.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Speaking of Uncle Benny's table, I am seated at the north end of Uncle Benny's table. Michael Kornheiser is seated at the south end of Uncle Benny's table, 6 feet apart, appropriately socially distanced. Let me just cut to the chase here. It's my birthday today. And as Cindy Bourne would tell you, I'm now 72 years old. And from the perspective of a 67-year-old, I don't know how much older that seems to her. But yes, it is my birthday, and I have thought about how old I am and how old I look and how old I feel. And I look older than I feel.
Well, let's name numbers. Separate the three. How old do you look?
85.
And you feel?
60. So I'm somewhere in the middle of that. And I would say that if you are a 72-year-old person in America, you are unlikely to be working. I would say that I am in a minority of people that age who are still working, very lucky to be working. The most prominent people who are working at this age are all running for president. They're either the president right now, or they're trying to be the president right now. So that, I guess, is what I could do next.
Yeah, 2024.
If there was a next. I mean, and it makes me wonder, how long am I going to keep doing this? How much more PTI do I have? Well, I don't make that decision. I don't make the PTI decision. Someone at ESPN makes that decision and will decide at some point, too old, doesn't have it anymore, not going to put him on, don't like the way he looks. That's probably what's going to happen. Give him a big party and a big send-off and tell him how great he is. But, you know, if I was that great, they wouldn't get rid of me. So I don't know. I mean, I got a year left on a contract, I think, or maybe two. The PTI show does well. Mike and I enjoy doing it. Neither of us is particularly young or looks particularly young. So we're hopeful that that stays on. Wilbon will be on later in the show. In terms of this, I like doing this. I like doing the podcast. It doesn't seem to be an age barrier on doing the podcast unless you just lose interest in it or you begin to forget things or you don't know where you are. That's why I'm always grateful to do this show as I do in New York City. Makes me very happy. I was hoping for a laugh on that.
I gave you a chuckle.
All right. So let me tell you a story.
Speaking of birthdays. Yeah.
Oh, it's the baby. It's the baby,
you
not the baby boy Bootsy.
On your own birthday.
Right, it's the Hammer's birthday.
Hammer.
It's also Matt Helfrich's birthday, at Waldron, and it's Marty West's birthday. So, and Marty sent me a message this morning. Marty, still a great golfer. I mean, I'm not even using that word in the context of great for his age. Right,
yeah,
still
I mean,
a great golfer.
He's still beating his number with the handicap.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's so I was away last week. It's all right. You know, I probably should have done a show or two from out in Delaware. Michael was away. Michael was in South Carolina. Did you enjoy South Carolina?
Yes. Yes, we did. Now, everyone can't know all the details of your trip to Rehoboth, but
right.
We could have had a Dunkin' Donuts level type of story situation from the kitchen table out there.
Yes.
If you were to have done a show.
Right. That's exactly right. But we're not going to talk about that for a while. But I will just say I had a scare. I had a scare and everything turned out to be all right. I did, when I was out there, I went to a couple of outlet stores. This was interesting to me.
Why'd you go to the outlets?
Because I always sort of buy something. I went to
T-shirts,
the Eddie Bauer outlet, and bought a T-shirt. And in the middle of being there, really actually stood there and said, why are you here?
Come on, man.
Why are you here? This is insane. I went to the Calvin Klein outlet, which was far more crowded, and got out in like 45 seconds.
You were there over a July weekend.
Yeah, it's really nuts. But what I wanted to do was go to the Brooks Brothers outlet because the situation that I'm in up in the attic, you know, I'm just sort of rotating. I'm not getting dressed up. I haven't put on a pair of shoes, real shoes, in 4.5 months. I haven't put on a pair of real pants, dress pants, in 4.5 months. I haven't taken out my good shirts, my David Donahue shirts, or my good sport jacket. I haven't done that. I've been wearing the same Johnny O button downs in rotation for 4.5 months. I've been wearing chinos and jeans to sit in the chair because nobody there's you can't see my legs or anything like that. So I haven't gotten dressed. So I thought I'd go to Brooks Brothers and pick up a couple of sport jackets for not all that much money and stick them into the rotation immediately. And Brooks Brothers was closed. And not only was it closed.
Have you not heard the news?
Well, I found out the next day when Carol told me Brooks Brothers is done. Brooks Brothers to me is iconic. Brooks Brothers to me is Kodak. Yeah, Brooks exactly. Brothers is Brooks Brothers is on your way up, quality, classy, conservative clothing. The three C's, quality, classy, and conservative.
Yeah, it's just that cancel culture, I guess.
You know, and now what I was told was people aren't really dressing for their jobs in the same way that they used to over the last 100 years. That advancement technique of getting certain clothes, better clothes, for example, in Joseph A. Banker Men's Warehouse, a little bit better. You can go anywhere in Brooks Brothers and nobody's buying it except old men, I guess. And so I felt really bad about that. I was one of the last to know on Brooks Brothers. Did you know? When did you find out? So they were just closed, and I figured it was just temporary in the outlets, but no, it's all over.
No, this broke last week. Now, where could you get a pair of sun-faded chino pants?
Well, in my case, those were just like I was on the clearance rack, but they also had, you know, I have sport jackets from there. They made quality ties and quality shirts. These are not designer. This is not
right, but even
Italian-made high quality, high end $1,500 suits. They're $400 and $500 suits. And if you wait for the right time, you can get them for $250. But they're well made, always were.
But this is the same issue that you had with the failings of the American Mall, where you're getting the disruptor was when you could get men's suit wear made custom to you. It's
That's
almost
right.
like we had a read for this.
That's right, Indochino. Well, and I endorse
like
it completely.
There are others like that where they can give you a better experience for a similar price point.
So I miss
the fit. You could always tell a Brooks Brothers suit because it looked like a refrigerator box.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But they're tailoring. You have to take their stuff to your own tailor. You know, that's what you have to do to get it pinched the way you want it to be pinched. I will say this about Brooks Brothers. I know I've said this a number of times on the show. They're the only true size that I ever encountered in America. If you bought a 36 at Brooks Brothers and it was tight on you, it was because you were a 37. But if you bought it anywhere else and they were generous to you because they wanted to flatter you and they'd say, well, you might need a 35. And you go, wow, I'm doing great. No, they just cut it more generously. They miss-size it deliberately to make you feel good. Brooks Brothers did not do that. Now that I've lost a bunch of weight and the Brooks Brothers 36s are big on me, I know I've lost too much weight. And not weight that I want to lose. I wanted to get to one other thing. It's my one story. So I was driving. I was going to go to Home Depot to get 4 plants.
Stay home.
I was going to go to Home Depot to get 4 plants because I had on the front walk in Delaware, I had 4 pots and what had been in them for a year or two had died. So I wanted to get some plants, replacement plants, not necessarily petunias because petunias, it's sort of late in the game to get petunias, but anything that flowered a little bit and anything that I could put in these pots. So I get in my car. I don't have any identification with me because I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to the Home Depot. It's about, what is that, 5-6 miles up the road, the Home Depot? Up one.
But that's a lot. That's a long 5 to 6 miles.
A lot of lights. Right. So I'm in my car and I go the way that I normally go, which is to go to on this block, Robinson Street, to make a right hand turn at the Just in Time restaurant, to make a right hand turn to get onto Route 1 about a block south of Bin 66, my favorite liquor store in Rehoboth Beach. And I don't know what happened, but there's a giant suburban Delaware State Trooper as I'm driving 25 miles an hour with his lights on right behind me, and I've got to pull over. I go, what is this?
New stop sign.
What is this? Well, the officer in charge is about 21 years old and introduces himself as Officer R. Prettyman, which is a nice last name, Prettyman. Says, you know, you just ran that stop sign. I said, I'm sorry. No, I didn't know. And I knew there was a new stop sign there, but I thought maybe I rolled through it. I mean, I didn't think I ran it. I didn't want to argue because I don't have anything with me. I don't really want to argue at this point. And I said, that's a pretty new stop sign, isn't it? And he said, it's been there for 2 years. I said, oh, okay. He says, where were you going? I said, I was just on my way to get coffee. Because I knew there was a coffee place really close by. I didn't want to say I didn't want to say I was on my way to the Home Depot because I knew I didn't have a license. He said, license and registration. I said, I don't really have my license with me because I was just on my way to get coffee. And I fumble through the glove compartment, and I find, ultimately, I don't find the license or registration. Then in one of the small little pockets of the glove compartment inside a plastic envelope is that, because I'd already told him, he'd asked me for my name, he asked me for my birth date, he said, where do I live? I told him where I lived. It's literally four blocks away from where I was stopped. And then I was able to produce the license and the registration. Now, at no time did I say anything resembling, do you know who I am? In fact, I just answered his questions. I said, is it okay to turn off the engine? He said, sure, you can do that. I said, do you need me for anything? He said, no. And he went back to his car. And he came back with a ticket. And he said, you know, you should carry... He was very nice. Kid, total kid. Younger than you, Michael. Maybe in his mid-20s. Came back and he said, you should carry your license at all times. I said, yes, you're right. I wasn't going far. And I got a ticket. The ticket is $104.50. That seemed to me to be, I didn't say anything. I can afford it. I already paid it. I sent it in. But that seemed like a lot of money. And I honestly don't think I ran the stop sign. But I didn't argue. What do you think?
They should double it just for not having your license. This is like a generational thing. You never have your license.
Yeah, I was lucky. That's why I didn't make a big deal about anything. That's why I didn't. That's why I paid it right away, because he had me. He had the ability, honestly, to arrest me.
Yes.
He had the ability to arrest me. Yep. So I was very fortunate in that. Has that ever happened to you, Nigel? With your little sports car?
I've always got my license with me, but I did have a ticket earlier this summer or spring where I parked in where the tour buses are supposed to park in Georgetown.
Yeah.
And I thought, the tour buses aren't going around. So
no, there's no tour buses
there. Right. So I got a $50 ticket and I contested it and said, well, it's ridiculous that I can't park here because there's no tour buses. So there should be free parking. And of course, they said, well, we're not buying that. You now owe us more money.
Oh, so you went to court on it.
Well, I did it online and they just said no.
I'm not doing any of that. I mean, I paid the ticket. You look at me, you're looking at me with daggers in your eyes.
It's not daggers, just total surprise as to where we've been in the last couple of months as a country that it's not luck. This is privilege. This is
I didn't think it had anything to do with privilege. I'm going to a neighborhood store. I'm not,
I take my 6 miles on a highway.
Right.
And it's a pattern that you have that you never bring your license.
And then I was afraid to go there, but I went there anyway. I convinced myself that our pretty man was not going to follow me.
Well, he was waiting for you at the coffee shop.
You know, he's not going to follow me. And I went to the Home Depot and I picked up some plants and I drove them home and I planted them. They were okay.
Would you ever consider putting perennials in those planters just so that you know they come back every season? Then you can put one or two.
I put annuals in. Because I didn't, I don't know if I'm going to be out there again. I don't even know. I don't know what's going to happen. And then we were greeted by a tropical storm that was just probably flooded out all the plants. I don't know. Go ahead.
Isn't this why you carry a duffel bag full of cash for these situations? So if you don't have your license, you say, well, I don't have my license, but is this your bag full of money? Is that yours, officer?
Can I offer you a signed PTI hat?
You know, no, I didn't do that. And he had no idea who I was. And I just let it go. Because I did what I was accused of doing. I don't think I did it to the degree. I don't think I ran it. I don't think I ran it. Yeah, I rolled it. But once I... when I saw that behind me, I went, oh my God, no, no, I don't have my license.
And this stop sign, it's not a four-way. This is
no.
This is at a T stop. It shouldn't be there.
Yeah, it's really not a good thing. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. We will take a break. Michael Wilbon will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. There's never been a bad time to save money, but now more than ever, finding smart ways to put some cash back in your pocket can make a big difference. One way to do that is simply save on the things you already pay for, like home insurance. If you own a home, reshopping your home insurance rates with Policy Genius could save you a good chunk of change. And the best part is you barely lift... Oh, Tony, you haven't read in a week. And the best part is you barely need to lift a finger to do it. First, you head to policygenius.com and you answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property, like why don't you have your license with you? Then Policy Genius will compare your policy against options from top insurers to make sure you're getting the right home insurance coverage at the best possible price. If Policy Genius finds you a better rate than what you're currently paying, they will do all the work to get you switched. Yeah, that's their job. Take advantage of their job. You own a car? Policy Genius will compare your home and auto policies across different insurers and even mix and match to find you savings. They have saved their customers. And this is the critical phrase in this entire read, so I don't want to mess this one up. They've saved their customers an average of $1,127 per year just doing that. That's pretty good. So if you'd like to put a little cash back in your pocket right now, see how much you can save by reshopping your home insurance rates at policygenius.com. And I'll spell that for you. PolicyGenius, policygenius.com.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are Terrence and the High Flyers. This is the new single. It's called Backseat Ride. We have given their song some airtime, and they're very good. Very nice. Very nice. Terrence and the High Flyers. If I bought music, I'd buy their music. And you can listen to it at the end of the show in its entirety and not have me talk over it like an idiot. Michael Wilbon joins us now. Wilbon and I played golf on Saturday, and I hadn't seen Wilbon, literally, in person, because the week before the pandemic struck hard, you had gone out to Arizona for a couple of days, right? It wasn't even supposed to be an elongated time.
No, I'd gone to California. I'd gone to California covering the NBA. It was a huge week where the last, Tony, when the NBA stopped, we had just seen Clippers-Lakers.
Right, that's right.
The third time.
Lakers had beaten them. That's right.
And I'd seen the Bucks-Lakers out there. I'd gone to California for a week and was actually on the way back to California again because there were other big games. And obviously the big stories, this year were that was the epicenter of basketball life again was Los Angeles with the Clippers and Lakers playing well. And we thought, going to battle each other for a conference title. I was west, but I was in California.
So I see him, and we're going to play, and we do play, and Wilbon plays very well, which I'll get to in a second. But he also looks at me and says, well, you look sick. You need to get tested.
I said, you look thin, which you do. Unbelievably thin. Unbelievably thin.
Didn't ask for it.
I did not say you look sick. I said, go get a test. It'll make you feel better. You don't have any symptoms. You're not going to be asymptomatic at our age.
No, it can't be asymptomatic.
Getting a test would make not everybody feel better. It would make you feel better because you're going to be negative. And that way, a doctor can say, you're negative. The test came back negative. So go get it. Go get one.
You played a full 18, and you played well. You ended up with a great par on 18. You played well. You shot like 87.
Yeah.
How did you feel?
Well. It was my first 18. You know what? I hadn't played 18 holes in a year. Because I started having,
foot problems.
I went to Asia, a year ago, Tony, a year ago now, I was in China with the whole family. We were in Asia for a month, just being tourists. And
right.
So I didn't play, that's when my foot issues started as well. But blisters from playing golf a lot in April, May, and then even in June during some off days in the playoffs. So I haven't played. I've been playing nine holes with Matthew, or just hitting balls lightly with a boot, pre-boot and post-boot. But I hadn't done even that in months. So,
well, it showed that you'd been hitting wedges, because your play inside of 100 yards was the best I'd ever seen you play.
Well, yeah, it's unlike me. Because, you hear people say, well, okay, if you can't do this, I couldn't swing anything long. I haven't swung a driver yet. I didn't swing a driver, as you know. Didn't I take the
That's right, you did hit three wood. Right.
For giggles. But, I've done that. And I've done that under the great tutelage of Tanya Tare, which, if people want to go online and look up Tanya, T-A-N-I-A, and then T-A-R-E, they can see her all over Instagram. She's a professional golfer, and she is really well known, not because of winning tournaments, but she's also a trick shot artist, and people love her. I didn't realize that I can go to lunch with her in Chicago or in Arizona or wherever, and people go crazy. And she's from New Zealand. She's fabulous looking, great player, great sense of humor, just fun to And she
she's recognized from her videos.
Videos. Oh, and television. She's a Golf Channel.
Okay.
And
I was unaware of that.
Yeah, she's the person I've been working with, and she just said, okay, there's a boot on your foot. I don't even understand this. So we're going to just hit wedges. You're going to hit wedges, like wedges. That's what the name of the game is, will be.
Well, it's totally grooved. It's totally grooved. It's not like me where I just fling it out to the right, shankopotamus, or ground ball it because I don't make the same swing. Your wedges were really good, and you putted very well.
Yeah, those are the two things I could do with no left foot.
Yeah, well, that's very good, very good.
She got me through that. Except she won't accept it.
No, she won't take your money. I mentioned at the top of this show, which you didn't hear because I had just done it before, that I acknowledge that it is my birthday today, but it is also the birthday of someone else who I believe is one of the three, and I'll narrow it down, one of the three greatest college basketball players of all time.
Oh, wow.
And that is David Thompson. David Thompson.
First of all, happy birthday. I was thinking the day was the 12th. I don't even know what day it is.
So it's the 13th.
So I wrote birthday. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you. So I wrote happy birthday to David Thompson. And on my list, and I mean, this is my list. It's very simple. I can go top 10. I can do whatever you want. But I believe the three greatest college players of all time are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was then, he was Kareem, or was he Lou? No, he was Lewis.
He was Lou
Alcindor. Okay. So I believe Lou Alcindor, David Thompson, and Bill Walton are the three greatest college players of all time. Where are you on my list? Do you agree or not agree? And then I put Bill Russell right after that, but I don't have him in the top three.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, you could put Russell. Thompson won one title.
Yep.
You could put Russell there instead of Thompson. But Thompson can't be out of your top five, and nobody under 40 even knows who he is anymore.
Well, there's a reason he only won one title. He only won one title because they cheated to get him, and they were ineligible.
I know.
But his way to the one title, in the semifinals, they beat Bill Walton.
Yeah,
in one of the greatest games ever played.
Yeah, great games of all time. Look, he's in mine. All you have to know is that the person that Michael Jordan idolized was David Thompson.
Yeah. People don't know. I wrote this
there's
out.
There's a reason he idolized him, because he's one, like you said.
That's right.
If you can round up the top five, I think I would have Russell, and I might even have Maravich. And I don't have Maravich for
anything. That's exactly who I have.
But Russell,
I have
Maravich.
And he never won any.
And then you know who you could have? You could have Christian Laettner.
Yes, you could.
I think Grant Hill was a better college player than Christian Laettner, because Grant Hill did something Christian Laettner didn't do. Grant Hill went to the final game and lost on a fluke great shot. Scotty Thurman, was it? Grant Hill, without Christian Laettner, damn near won a third one on his own. He came within seconds. He came within a shot of winning a third one without Laettner. That's why Hill's great. Because Laettner didn't win Jack without Hill. But Hill was right there without Laettner. Right there, ready to hoist
the
trophy.
I'll give you one other person, and this rounds out my top seven. You got the all six. The other one is Patrick Ewing. He went to three.
Yeah. Oh, Patrick. Yeah.
Patrick Ewing. Yeah. He went to three.
You know,
so
he went
that's
to three, but he didn't lead them. Was Akeem. Akeem wasn't a factor on the first one. It was a Clyde
that's right.
Drexler.
So
you know,
I think it's
Meshaw team.
So tell people about David Thompson, because this is consensus All-American three times in 3 years, ACC Player of the Year. That's the best conference three times in 3 years.
Yeah, the two guys who would have rearranged the rankings of the top 25 of all time, and that's David Thompson and Phil Ford.
Phil Ford is great.
Even got to the pros and were great. They got there and they showed you why they won in college and why they were among the greatest players of all time.
Better in college, but great in the pros.
But they were great in the pros, but they weren't great, you know, because of substance abuse.
It's in both cases. In both cases.
Yeah. I'm saying, in both cases. Look, they would have been. People would have been saying, okay, the greatest point guards of all time. You got Magic, and you got this person, and you got Kidd, and you got Cousy. You got Phil Ford. If you don't think so, people, millennials, look him up. I say to Matthew, the sentence spoken most often in my house is he has become now just, you know, aggressive with his alleged sports knowledge. He's pretty damn good at 12. He's way years ahead of me at where I was at 12 or 14 or even 16. I say, basketballreference.com, big boy. Go to basketballreference.com. That's it. I don't want to talk to you. Go there now. So I'm telling people who are listening, go to basketballreference.com. Look up Phil Ford. Phil Ford and David Thompson, unbelievably great talents. And, yeah, Phil Ford, I mean, David Thompson, wow. I mean, David Thompson, his nickname was Skywalker.
And, David Thompson. You know, so I wrote this. I wrote this for the Happies. The sort of mythological lineage of jumpers. It starts with Connie Hawkins and Elgin Baylor.
Yeah.
It goes through Billy Cunningham, Julius Erving, David Thompson, and it ends with Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you can Jordan, say there are people after Jordan, but there's no
Kobe,
point in saying there's people.
I mean, you got
there is no point.
You know,
it ends with Jordan.
There became a lot of people after that, obviously. But
that's right.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, no, David Thompson. Hold on, don't tell me. I'm going to say David Thompson would be. He's only like 3 years older than me. I'm going to say 64, max 65. But I'm going to say 64.
66. 66 years old today. Wow. And do you remember his hometown? And this is why Michael Jordan.
No, I don't.
Michael Jordan would know this because he grew up watching him. Shelby, North Carolina.
Shelby. Yeah,
Shelby, North Carolina.
You know that James Worthy and Sleepy Floyd were from Gastonia.
Gastonia.
Yeah, I mean,
you remember
so
it for
Carolina
your whole life.
Because they were introduced in the one of the great, 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 great players of the ACC in particular. You sort of knew. You know,
North Carolina kept its people home.
Well, they had three great programs. They had, you know.
But this is not a case where anybody can say, I'm going to be the coach now and I'm going to keep our best people home. Because in North Carolina, every great basketball player stayed home. They did. They either went to state or to Duke or to UNC.
After integration, they stayed home. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
they did.
And it began with Charlie Scott.
Charlie Scott was. I was going to say Charlie Scott has to.
He's
be
first.
Acknowledged,
he's first.
And of course, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie Scott. Wow. You know, he had great players at Carolina, man. And Earl Monroe. Earl Monroe, I believe, from Winston-Salem.
Yes,
you know,
stayed home in the state.
Stayed home. Hey, how about? Okay, I'll give you a recent one that. That stayed home and from Winston-Salem. That would be Chris Paul. Went to Wake.
Okay. That's right.
And so
I'll give you one who didn't stay home.
Transaction. Well, there were
I'll give you one who didn't stay home.
Lately. Who?
One guy who didn't stay home, but it's sort of like going home. Danny Manning went to play for Larry in Kansas.
Yeah.
And Larry was so affiliated with North Carolina. Yep.
Yeah,
that's
he hired
right.
his dad.
All right.
Yeah.
Are you going to go to Orlando? What are you thinking?
I mean, not soon. I mean, I hope there's something worth going. I hope that there's a thing to go to, which means I don't, you know, we played a game almost every day for the few for the days you were on vacation, Frank and I did, about your confidence level that there will be a season. And a week ago, I think I said 7 to 8. You know, now, it might be a little less. It's not under 5, but there's got to be something to go to. And the one thing I'll be able to see is how this functions. If you caught Charles Barkley, I know you didn't, because I said to you the other day, Saturday, did you see Charles this morning? And Charles said, look, I'm rooting for this. This is a league I love. This is how I've made my living. I don't believe they can get through this. With the way the world is turning again. And Charles was very persuasive and very smart in his argument about this. They were coming to you from the Century, the golf tournament.
Yeah,
you know,
golf tournament.
Celebrity in Tahoe. And Charles, and I listened to Charles, and I'm just going, yeah, he makes some really persuasive points. And I don't, if there's something to go to, and I hope there is, then I would go, you know, we've talked about this already. I would go, I don't know, maybe Labor Day. There would be two rounds of basketball after Labor Day, starting Labor Day. And that would be the conference finals and the finals. So that would be half of the playoffs if I do that. If the network still wants me to do it, if, you know, you got, there's a list of things on the protocol, Tony. You got to see your physicians with good reason. I mean, you can't just wander in there willy-nilly, not knowing what you're getting into, not being prepared, not being permitted. You know, what are you doing? What are you doing there? You can't just roll out and say, yeah, I'm going to go home for a couple of days. No. You're there. And for people who think that this is some kind of joke, this is easy, they're idiots. I mean, these guys are, the guys who are going to be in there, they're going to be in there for 10 weeks at least. Plus the camp, they're going to be in there for more than 3 months, 3.5 months. And so when people say, oh, there should be an asterisk by this, yeah, there should be an asterisk. This is the hardest damn championship that will ever be won if they can produce a champion. I don't care who wins it. To survive the bubble, and yes, you can be safe. Look, if it works, Tony, people will say, well, why would you go? Because it'll be safer than anywhere. If we get to Labor Day and they're still playing, that place will be safer than anywhere I could go otherwise, including Washington.
I agree.
So that's if it's still going. I hope it does. I think it takes courage to do what the NBA and the NHL and soccer and the NBA, WNBA, I think it takes courage to do it and to convince your people to do it, for them to convince themselves. And I applaud these people. Standing ovation for everybody who's doing it. And I understand the ones who aren't. I understand it. When Avery Bradley says, I got a kid who's 6 who's got the following respiratory issues, I'm not doing this, even if it means a title. That takes courage, too. So there's a long way to go between now and Labor Day, as
indeed.
You know. I mean,
indeed.
We got 6 weeks.
We're not even into August yet. All right, I will sort of kind of see you later. I'll be in the attic and you'll be downtown.
You'll be in the
but
attic.
At least I saw you.
You know, we got to work on you at some point to get you mobile, agile. You're agile because you weigh about 150, it looks like.
More than that, but not much more than that.
Jeez.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Michael Wilbon,
right,
boys and
talk
girls.
To you.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. Liz Clark will join us to talk about apparently the impending name change of the Washington Redskins. And I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a Simply Safe ad. What's the number one sign of a bad home security system? A home security system that is so complicated you never use it. This is exactly the type of security system Simply Safe has spent a decade fighting against. They believe that simple is safer, and it is exactly why Simply Safe is the home security for right now, when feeling safe at home has never been more important. It was designed to be easy to use while protecting your entire home 24/7. You order online with the click of a button, you open the box, you place the sensors, you plug it in, and your home is protected around the clock. No technician or salesperson has to come and disrupt your house. You don't need to pay any outrageous monthly fees or sign a 2-year contract. And then, of course, the copy says, tell a personal story about setting up Simply Safe. No, can't. Don't know how to do it. Absolutely don't know how to do it. But I'm in the very small minority. I mean, I just have no particular skills. But it sounds very easy to do. I'll bet Michael could do it.
I did do it.
So there you go.
You have Nigel and me to do this for you.
Simply Safe was named best overall home security of 2020 by U.S. News and World Report, and their 24/7 professional monitoring and emergency dispatch starts at 50 cents a day. So head to simplysafe.com/Tony. Get free shipping. Get a 60-day money-back guarantee. That is Simply Safe, S-I-M-P-L-I, simplysafe.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
God, this is familiar. This sounds like something we could do for Old Guy Radio. The septuagenarian, and I speak lovingly because I am one myself, the septuagenarian, Bruce Springsteen, or as Randy Newman calls him, Bruce Springsteen. This is Thunder Road. This is, as Liz knows far better than I, because she's been to so many more concerts than I have, Liz Clark. He doesn't even sing this. Everybody sings this, right? Everybody sings this.
This is
every
beautiful.
Single person in the crowd sings.
Yes. Oh, yes. I see. That is quite true. It is quite. It's a shared experience. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, he comes in at the end here and there, but not very much.
Yeah.
Liz Clark is with us, and we're so happy to have her for a variety of reasons, but one is because she's working on a story that is breaking in front of our eyes or in front of our ears, as the case may be, in a podcast. The Washington Redskins, I saw it on a crawl on ESPN this morning, unattributed, so I don't know who had this story first, but it is apparently believed and true that the Washington Redskins name will no longer exist as of this morning. Can you bring us up to speed on what's going on?
Yes. So what my coworkers reported, Les Carpenter and Mark Maskey, and I think the Sports Business Journal had it first, was that this is the morning, at some point this morning, the team will announce it is retiring the name that has stood for nearly 90 years, and people have sought to change with, you know, over the years. So that they're taking that step. They are not going to announce the new name. Apparently there are legal issues involved, so that will come later. The hope is that they have that new name and imagery by the start of the season.
Do you know or believe that they have decided on a new name, a specific new name, and they know what it is?
I don't know more than probably the average reader of the Post on that, because the second they moved in that direction, I'm focusing more on the franchise in general,
right,
than every development with the name. And I know people are having great sport with throwing out names and imagery. What Ron Rivera told our paper is that he and Snyder had focused on two names, both of which he considers honors the military and Native Americans. I think the latter move is probably not wise, to try to find a better way to honor Native Americans, just given how fraught the issue is. I don't think they're going to get a lot of benefit of the doubt in their efforts to do so. Kind of extraneous, but you know, I think it's reasonable to think that Warriors is one of them. It fits that description that Rivera said, and it's also the name that Snyder chose a couple years ago when he made an effort to get the Arena League football team. His Arena League football team, which never came to pass, was going to be the Washington Warriors. So, but no, I don't have any inside poop on Red Tails, Red Doves, Red Hawks, whatever, Red Wolves. I know those are, I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but people have all sorts of ideas. I if I had to guess, I'd guess Warriors, but I don't know.
I liked Red Tails personally when it was explained to me what it was. I thought it was a very appropriate name. I did find it interesting that Rivera said what he said. And this is over a week ago. It's about 10 days ago. Because he dropped in an honor the military. And I said, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
So that must have been the product of a very specific discussion, right? He wouldn't have said that on his own.
I don't think so, but I do know that in his tenure at Carolina, he was very mindful and respectful of the military. It is a very big issue with him that that the nation and his part of the nation honors the military. He's very mindful that that's a represents a big part of the fan base of Washington's team. So I don't think it's as much of a non sequitur as maybe it sounded, but I mean, I could see, and I agree with you, Red Tails, and I had to educate myself on what that represented.
Me too.
I think that's very cool.
So let me ask, and that also keeps the HTTR. It keeps that thematically
true.
if you want to. I mean,
yeah.
here's the question I have, and I know that it is such an easy way to say to the answer to this question, oh, stop with this. It took forever and ever. But let me try and narrow the context down completely. We all understand that Dan Snyder did not and does not want to change the name. Everybody understands that. Given the fact that it feels like a tsunami has happened to him and that position, do you think he has moved quickly, or do you think he has dragged his feet? And I'm only starting with, you know, what has happened in the last month or so. How does it seem to you?
You know, it seems to me quite like global warming, in that he has dragged his feet for forever and
yes.
denied. And in some ways, a smart person could see the end game. You know, it's going to go down. The name is going down. But what was impossible to predict was the timing. Like, when exactly is the point of no return with the ice caps? When are we all going to melt? So the answer is both. I mean, no, I don't think he gets any credit whatsoever for any sort of swift and timely response by any means. This, even now, it's not knuckling. It's not answering to corporate request or corporate shunning. He's responding to a $45 million loss, which is what the FedEx letter said. You know, it was legal notice. We're going to sever a contract with 6 years remaining and not pay you for the balance if you don't change the name. So I still don't think people get that is what business pressure looks like. It's not simply taking things off your website or putting out a statement saying, gee, we'd like you to change the name. Hardball business pressure is you're going to lose revenue. That is the lever. That is what moved. So, yes, I have since learned that in ways I wasn't aware, the past couple months there have been conversations with Rivera, with the league, with at least a few of his co-owners, trying to get him to change the name, and he was stubborn. So, yes, in a 12-day span, the last 12 days have been dizzying with first the news that politically you can't possibly get the RFK site with this name. The next day, the benign, fairly benign FedEx public statement just saying, yes, we have requested he change the name. I mean, that's kind of mind-blowing, but it was just one sentence. But that same day is when his lawyer sent the basic notice of we're going to end this contract if you don't save the name, change the name.
Do you think?
Yes.
Do you think that if he had said no in the same ways that he had said no before, do you think the league would have removed him as an owner in the way that baseball removed Marge Schott as an owner and basketball removed Donald Sterling as an owner?
You know, I've always thought and said, if anybody asked, the league and Dan Snyder in particular, no one is going to take any action on this name until and unless it hurts them financially, until and unless they feel it in their wallet. So if Snyder had said no, including to the FedEx letter, I mean, there's sort of two what-ifs. I'm not sure the team could remain solvent, you know, without that $45 million that is part of their budgeting, and you'd have to think other sponsors. I mean, the power of Bank of America, Pepsi, Nike, that's pulling money out, too. That's an implied threat. And there may have been a frank letter from all those companies. So he certainly, he would have been in financial trouble just owning the team, his ability to hang on to the team, if he lost all local sponsors, big, big money local sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And but that probably would have also dovetailed with the moment when league owners started to feel it, and they would feel it if the league's national sponsors said, no, we can't hang with this. You know, more than just saying, more than the occasional broadcaster saying, I personally will not say your name, which is a powerful personal move for anyone to make in broadcasting. Let's face it. But I think the league would have stepped in when they thought it was hurting their business. And I think actually both things coalesced at the same time, you know, a stark
okay.
window on both.
So let me get to this. As you say, this name has been out there for a long period of time, making a lot of people feel bad for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. This did not happen overnight by any stretch of the imagination. FedEx and Nike and Pepsi and all Bank of America, they signed deals with him while that name was out there, while there was still a large and growing movement to get rid of this name. Did they just get religion overnight, all of these people? Are they culpable in it too? And do you believe that his partners actually want to sell their shares?
Yeah, all really good questions. You might have to help my scrambled brain. Yes, on how come they were down with it for so long and boom, they're not.
Yeah.
You know, as I review my notes from the FedEx letter, I don't even need to start there. We all recognize that the killing of George Floyd on May 25th changed our national conversation or awareness, and it's seismic, and we're still going through the seismic effects. One of those effects is corporate America CEOs are, instead of just sitting silently by and not taking a position, we're seeing them affirmatively take a position in favor to their shareholders of justice, social justice, equality. And once you do that, it becomes untenable to do that with one hand and then be okay with bankrolling the Redskins. You know, and Nike is in most stark relief. They went very hard behind Colin Kaepernick with a very bold ad campaign because that is their market. So for them, it's hypocrisy suddenly that just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I'm not questioning their sincerity, but it became kind of a shareholders issue in that group of responsible shareholders who say, I own your company. You can't support A and then support this team. It doesn't make sense. So I think, again, most million, billion-dollar business pivots or backtracks are not really made because of a moral awakening. It's because the business climate gets impossible. And I do think the FedEx letter also made clear, in effect, that, you know, our world has changed since 1999. The letter did not say these words, but this is what I read between the lines. It's saying, the world has changed. This is a different world. Let us restate for you our corporate values of inclusion. And the letter, graph by graph, says this is what FedEx stands for. Now, further association with you risks damage to that brand. So they're saying, basically, join us in changing this name. Join us in responding to this climate because we're responding to this climate. So they're saying, you know, we're not going to take away our $45 million if you change the name. But if you don't, you know, we're here through the end of this season, which I guess is, you know, legal notice. You can't say tomorrow.
Right.
You're giving them an option. You know, to paraphrase, you know, we're woke. You get woke too. Be woke with us. Do the right thing. And if you don't, we gotta part ways.
Do you think the individuals who represent various companies, like Fred Smith, who's the CEO of
mm-hmm.
of FedEx and is a partner with Dan Snyder, a personal
yes.
partner.
Yes.
Dwight Schar is a personal partner. There was a yes. story last week that these guys wanted out. Do you think they still want out if the name goes?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes. That was our story. I reported on that. So, yeah.
Right, so.
No, they. So this is their report or the I mean, these are tips, in effect, we had for a while. Those are not stories that are easy to report. It's a different standard, as you know, to pose a question on social media. You know, could it be that the ownership is fraying? But we can't report a story saying that the three owners are seeking buyers for their 40% stake unless we have it nailed. So, yes, and that is not related in the narrow sense to the name. I mean, my understanding is they had
they're just done with him.
The issue. They are not happy being his business partners.
Yeah,
and that
okay.
has been a long, slow boil, and it is irrevocable, as I'm told. I mean, they've already signed up with the investment firm that is shopping around their respective shares. So anyone can buy them right now, and you won't have to answer for that name. You know, that should make the selling of that share
more attractive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Thank you, Liz. Thank you. Okay. I know you have a long day ahead of you. Thank you.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Liz Clark, boys and girls. It reminds me of one of the very few quotes that I've taken with me over some long period of time. It is a Don Ohlmeyer quote. And Don Ohlmeyer was very, very effective and high-ranking producer of television. And he once said to me, the answer to all your questions is money. And that's what Liz Clark was saying with this. We will take a break. We'll come back with email and a jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Boys and girls, welcome to my table where we'll try to do a podcast for as long as we are able. We'll kill a solid hour here, so stick around. It's nominally a sports show, but there's even less of that now. Jesse and Michael social distancing, we're properly all spaced out. At Uncle Benny's last bequest. All of my cousins, well, they took straight cash. But Benny left the wood for me, because that surely worked to get me furniture, and now it's sitting in my dining room. It's Uncle Benny's last bequest.
This is so great by Brad Weiss. It is so great. He writes, the pandemic has reduced me to writing parodies of dining room furniture. I hope you're happy. It's just so great. I would like to take his courses, his anthropology courses, if I had the chance. That'll do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me remind you that there were ghosts in the eyes of all the boys you sent away. They haunt this dusty beach road and the skeleton frames of burned out Chevrolets. That's for Liz. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Liz Clark. Thanks to our sponsors, Policy Genius and Simply Safe. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. So Nigel comes by in the morning and he hands me a bunch of emails for me to read. This one was right near the top. I just start with this. Aloha, Tony. My name is Scott Kagan. Going back to 1971, you were living in the Azores Apartments in Long Beach, New York. I was a polar bear surfer and used to surf in front of the Azores, even with 4 feet of snow on the ground. You thought that was pretty cool. You asked me about doing an article on that. I was 17 at the time, and I'm happy to report that 50 years later, I live in Hanalei Bay, Kauai, and still surf almost every day. The Newsday article was a hit. Unfortunately, I lost the one copy I cherished all these decades, and now there is a book being written about the early days of surfing in Long Beach, as many legendary surfers came out of that era and locale. Is it possible to get the article from you? I tried Newsday, but their archives only go back to 2011. If you ever get out this way, and he gives me a number, and he says mahalo at the end. I don't remember him. I don't remember the story. I saved every story I ever wrote, so I probably could find it, you know, if I got into the stacks of all the junk that I have. But when I die, I'm going to leave it to Michael. He can do it. Charlie Burt's in Springfield, Virginia. While vacationing in Black Mountain, North Carolina last week, I decided to tour Camp Rockmount, my boyhood camp. The land was beautiful as I'd remembered from when I attended nearly 40 years ago. The only real question that kept coming to me was, why do I want to talk about this to some 71-year-old ESPN guy. Well, I'm 72, so you don't have to worry about it. From John in Binghamton, New York. Dear Tony, I heard your shout out of Thurman Munson and the Binghamton Triplets. It brought back memories of Sunday afternoons at Old Johnson Field. That's from Johnson of Endicott and Johnson and EJ Shoes and stuff like that. And watching Thurman begin his baseball career. He hit 301 with six homers and 37 RBI in 1968. I was fortunate enough to witness one of them. Sadly, that was the last year of the Triplets in Binghamton, as the following year Johnson Field was torn down to make room for a new highway. Thank you for bringing back the memories of the good old days. Well, they built a field somewhere in another part of town, and it now is the host of the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. So, Craig Stampone in Charlotte, North Carolina. Who needs March Madness Bracket Week when we can have 37 nearly identical emails explaining the license plate game? Yes, they are nearly identical. Justin Johnson in Arlington, Virginia. Do the three separate shipping charges add up to 24? That's for Eddie Bauer. I still have only gotten one shirt. I don't understand that. Kelly Carden in Ozark, Mississippi. I've never heard the story about the Seven of Hearts, and I've been listening to the show for two decades. I must have told that story a variety of times. From Doug Benson, knowing you're getting tons of email daily, I'll keep this simple. I'm the drone guy who sent you Tootsie Rolls several years ago, but I've moved on in my career. So here is the new license plate I just ordered to proudly display in Wilbon, Chicago. And it's Illinois, land of Lincoln, and in the middle it says the Oneiders. It's just the Oneiders are the wonders. It's so wonderful. Mike Dower, I hope I pronounced that correctly, or Dower, as hard-hitting as it is, getting updates on D.C. traffic as I sit in Chattanooga. I couldn't contain my excitement over the discussion of landmarks around your hometown on Long Island. Hailing from Greenlawn, on Long Island, my father taught at the University of New York at Farmingdale. He would grab our eggs and milk from the dairy on campus next to the Dew Drop Inn. I do think we're missing one giant of the industry, the man, the myth, the legend, Charles Chips. The big Charles Chips truck would pull into our driveway every other week to deliver large cans of chips and pretzels. They did that when I went to college, too, in Binghamton, Charles Chips. This immediately took care of two of my basic seven food groups growing up on the island. Thanks for the memories. From Gary Matushak, who writes, with time on my hands, with the virus and all, I finally got around to watching A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood recommended by your friend Ann Hornaday a while back, and now I have a few questions for her. I haven't seen that. Have you seen it, Michael?
No,
the Tom Hanks movie?
Just,
I haven't seen it.
I've only seen the documentary.
Haven't seen it. Assuming this movie is actually a prequel to The Americans, when does Lloyd dump his wife, change his name, and move in with Elizabeth? Do they make it a bilingual home and teach Gavin Russian and English? It's obvious that Lloyd Philip kills his father to hide his secret identity once the father re-enters Lloyd's life. Are there any other murders in the plot? Speaking of murders, and when does Mr. Rogers have time to talk to his KGB contacts with his busy TV schedule? Speaking of murders, I started to watch the movie Knives Out. I started to watch that. I got about 30 minutes in and then I went to sleep. I was tired. Carol watched the whole movie. I guess I'll watch it at some point. And Tony Beeson, by the way, of Cincinnati, sends in a new helmet and a new name, the Washington Flaming Metro Fires. And on the side of the helmet, he has a metro signal and a fire on top of it. It's just a wonderful nickname and logo, which we'll find out about, I guess, down the road. Anyway, that's it. We'll do this again, right? On Wednesday, we'll do it again. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I hate pumpkins.
I do.
Happy birthday, honey.
Slide on over, Lucy.
crushed all night. Take it for a backseat ride. If you want to ride, eBay will go far. Living up and down the back streets in my car. Take it slowly.